There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Ahead on NFL Live, all hail the Seahawks. The win on Monday night lands Seattle at the top of the NFC West. Can Russell Wilson keep the Hawks flying in the right direction? Plus, Cyber Monday is come and gone. Who has buyer's remorse? We'll look at who paid what and why it may not have been the best idea. And with Tom Brady frustrated and the New England offense stalling, what are the realistic expectations for the 2019 Patriots? Happy to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix, Diana Rossini, Ryan Clark, and Coach Jack Del Rio. Listen, the Cowboys started the season with high expectations. That is a true statement. But now it's a season that has devolved into a race to win the worst division in football. Here we go. That's where we start. Cowboys sit at 6-6 after a disappointing home loss to the Bills on Thanksgiving Day. And as Dallas prepares to face the Bears Thursday night, Jerry Jones continues to answer questions about the future of his head coach, Jason Garrett.
I look at where we are with our skill set and look at other teams where they are with theirs. And there's nothing that in my mind that jumps out at me that we can't be playing well enough to take it to the house. I think about there's no exclusive. Nobody's got the exclusive skills to get the job done so that collectively you can win a Super Bowl. But they're qualified people. Jason Garrett is one of them. In my opinion, Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year.
Well, look, Jerry Jones has been supportive of Jason Garrett. I think it's fair to say that, however, was an interesting statement with friends like Jerry. Look, Coach Ryan, we'll start with you. Ryan, you're coaching in the NFL next year. Yeah, I think we should. I think that's a fair assessment.
Woo, boy.
Go ahead, my friend.
Jerry Jones is not stupid.
No.
Right? At all. You don't get to the point he is in life. You don't get to be this rich if you're a stupid man. But what he is, he's rich enough to not really care. Like, Jerry Jones knows how the things that he says will be taken. He knows that people on the outside will be listening. Also, people within his organization. He understands what a statement like Jason Garrett will be coaching in this league next year will make everybody do, will make the people in the building do. Where will he be coaching? Jerry, what will he be coaching? Will he be a quarterback's coach? Will he be an offensive coordinator? But what you won't say is he will be the coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And that's what matters. If you're talking about Jason Garrett and being anywhere, which he has done for year in, year out, when we wanted him to fire Jason Garrett for being mediocre, he said, he's my guy. He's my coach. He will be here. I have faith in him. That tune has totally changed, too. I love the way Mike Zimmer coaches football. I don't expect to ever outcoach Bill Belichick. And if I can't, because I can't outcoach Bill Belichick, I expect to outcoach Adam Gase and not lose to him. Jerry Jones is ready to get rid of dude.
Well, there's no doubt that the rhetoric and the tone has changed. No, it's interesting the point Ryan makes that Jerry Jones is smart and knows what he's saying. You know, that was true with Ezekiel Elliott as well when he made that Zeke who, you know, and he said, oh, I was kidding. He was kidding, but he was, you know, every joke has a morsel of truth. He does know what he's saying and he understands how it will be portrayed. And in this case, I think you're right. The unwavering support for Jason Garrett has come to an end.
Yeah, and the actions speak louder than words. So, I mean, he's given us a lot of words, but really the actions, he doesn't have a contract going forward next year. So he might coach, but Jerry's saying it's not going to be here, but he feels confident it'll be somewhere else. To me, you know, the writing's on the wall. When the organization says that we have everything you need and you have to win a Super Bowl or bust, that's all. I mean, there's not much more to talk about. I mean, really, it's been laid out there pretty clean, and Jerry feels like he's assembled. He is the general manager and the owner. He feels like he's assembled a championship team, and they're not playing like a champion right now.
Doesn't it remind you of when you go through a breakup and the person says to you, I don't want to be with you anymore, but the next person is so lucky to have you? It has that same sort of tone. Like, you know, he'll be coaching in the league, We just don't really probably want him here in Dallas because he has really been consistent, at least early on in the season, with backing him, saying even as soon as 2 weeks ago, he was saying better things about Jason Garrett. And it just seems every time they win, he loves them. And as soon as they start losing or put together, a poor performance, he immediately changes the tune. And he likes to keep him on notice. But I think I don't want to speak for you guys, but I think we can all agree that by the end of the season, if they don't make the playoffs, this is going to probably be
it. I'm not even sure it's making the playoffs.
I think it takes more than that.
What a Super Bowl.
And I believe it's always going deep. I believe it's always been that for Jason Garrett in this season, and this is why he didn't have a contract going forward. But I also understand, too, that a huge reason that Jason Garrett is there is because he can deal with this part of coaching for Jerry Jones.
And I don't think, I think that's worth sort of underlining. Not everybody can. And, Coach, you've been a coach in this league for several teams. It is a different animal when you coach for Jerry Jones, and you have to take the total package. Yeah. Not everybody can do that.
Or not,
right? Hey. And
Because you don't get it.
For me, there have to be an understanding. I'll be honest. If I'm there, I would have to have an understanding because it could not go the way it goes right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Jason Garrett has been able to handle that part, I think, and to function within those stipulations. And so, but, you know, I think this relationship is coming to a close in terms of the head coach.
But come the end of the season, though, when this job is open, let's just say, you think there's going to be guys that are going to turn that opportunity down because of Jerry Jones?
I don't believe so, but I also understand that his more successful coaches who have had different personalities also haven't lasted as long as Jason Garrett has. They've been more successful. They've won Super Bowls, but also those people have left a lot earlier.
Jerry needs a strong presence, like a Jimmy Johnson.
To push back.
He needs a strong presence for his head coach, but he is not going to have one if he mandates that things go a certain way. And that's just a reality. So, like, what he needs the most, he probably repels away.
Greatest strength, greatest weakness, right? We see it so often. Look, let's look back on Monday Night Football. We talked about this game. There were playoff implications. Kirk Cousins and the Vikings facing Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. And we will pick this one up with just under 5 minutes to go in the first half. Russell Wilson stringing together an MVP caliber season. Kirk Cousins has really changed the course of his season. Wilson back to throw, but it's batted down, the pick six. Anthony Harris takes it in for the score, and the Seahawks fans not pleased. But, you know, how much of this was Russell Wilson's fault, Ryan?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily his fault. The batted ball, he tries to do the right thing. He just got to work on his hops a little bit.
Opening drive in the third quarter for Seattle. Same scene. Same score, I should say. Wilson gets it to Chris Carson. A few misses, and it is a first down. Seahawks later in the drive, second and goal to Rashad Penny, and he takes it in for the touchdown. It is a tie ball game, 17-all. First play of the Vikings ensuing drive, and Cousins gives it to Dalvin Cook. It's a fumble. Seahawks recover.
Nobody cares about the picture. I don't even care about the fumble. I care about the fact that Dalvin Cook was still lying on the ground as they were reviewing this play, making sure it was a fumble.
Well, and Cook would not return. The Seahawks turned that fumble into a field goal. 14 seconds left in the third quarter. Wilson to a wide open David Moore. Something busted up there.
What happened to the safety, Ryan?
Sometimes, Coach, we go the other way. And right there, it was definitely a bust. And you'll see on the sideline, Xavier Rhodes is going to be face-to-face with Harrison Smith.
We also got a bit of new addition there in the celebration. First play of the fourth quarter, same score. Second and 10 for the Vikings. Cousins for Diggs, but it is intercepted by Trey Flowers.
The big thing about Trey Flowers, he was a college safety at Oklahoma State. They liked his length and his size, and he's been a big pickup for them in the draft.
Is that DPI or no?
Second.
No, never is, Coach. I ain't never going to say that out loud.
For the Seahawks to Penny, and the Seahawks score 24 straight points over 10:32 in the second half, and as a result, take a 34-17 lead. But Cousins isn't done. To Kyle Rudolph, that's a one-handed grab in the end zone.
Very nice.
Listen, this is a big boy play. He boxed out KJ Wright, right? It was like a mouse in the house when we go to open gym at the YMCA.
Vikings miss the extra point. Here come the Seahawks, third and one with 2:17 to play.
I just can't believe it. How they got run on over 200 yards.
218 rush yards, Coach. What happened? All right. Vikings with the chance down 7:21 to go. Seattle kicking off. It is fumbled. The Seahawks recover, and that will do it. 37
30. Cousins 0-8 on Monday Night Football. Russell Wilson is as steady as they come. The Seahawks QB surpassed 3,000 passing yards last night, his eighth straight season with 3,000 yards and a winning record. The only players in NFL history with a longer streak of that kind, you've heard of them, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and it's decent company for the MVP hopeful. Where do we start with talking about Russell Wilson saying, I think people are sleeping on him, but they're probably awake. Now, they better be, Coach, because this is an extraordinary season, and the Seahawks will be contenders as we move deeper into the season.
This is as fine a year as Russell's ever had. Mm-hmm. And nobody's sleeping on Russell Wilson. He's been carrying this team. If anything, we've been sleeping on their defense because their defense is playing really hard and it's causing turnovers. But Russell Wilson has been tremendous throughout the year. He is in the hunt. But right now, the problem with Russell and MVP talk is that there's a guy named Lamar Jackson that has kind of stole the show.
Did anything last night change that? Does he catapult over Lamar Jackson?
He is chasing a dude that is as hard to catch in this MVP race as he is when he's running the football.
Which is pretty darn hard.
It's pretty hard. He's just getting better and better each week. His team is on an 8-game winning streak. But when you look at Russell Wilson and what he did for this team when the defense wasn't playing well, when the run game wasn't what it is now, that's why we were putting him in the MVP conversation. He was carrying this team. There were games where the defense would get run on. They'd get scored on. They couldn't get a running game going. He was running for his life. He was throwing balls in the corner to Tyler Lockett when Eric Weddle was faced up guarding him. And so Russell Wilson has put himself in a position to be talked about in the manner that he is. And I believe his teammates believe he should be the MVP because he has carried them. But right now his focus is on getting this team to another Super Bowl.
There's no question. He'll take that any day would be my guess. Let's do a little panic or patience, shall we? And we mentioned Dalvin Cook. He left the game last night with a shoulder injury. Diggs looked a little banged up. Adam Thielen still not back with the hamstring injury. So are we panic or patience, Diana, on those injuries adding up?
All right, so I'm patient on this at this point. Love that. I talked to Dalvin Cook a few minutes ago and just asked him how he's feeling. And he says he's good. He's going to be playing on Sunday. And, you know, he said that yesterday post-game too. I think it could have been a lot worse, could have been more serious. But fortunately for him, it's okay. He's just feeling a little bit sore. Diggs is fine. He's a little bit banged up, but it's not too bad. Adam Thielen's really the one that has the big question mark. Of course, he wants to get back out there. But we know that those hamstring injuries is going to take some time. So I'm patient that this is going to be a major problem for them come mid to late December.
All right, Ryan, Kirk Cousins now 0-8 on Monday Night Football. I said yesterday I thought sometimes we make a little much of that, but nevertheless, panic or patience on Cousins in big moments, on the big stage.
You know, I'm patient.
Yeah,
How about that? I am very zen. I've been reading, right? I've been waking up in the morning and I've been meditating.
Oh,
and during my meditation,
gracious.
I thought to myself, you know what? Kirk Cousins is actually getting better. The reason that that team had an opportunity to win this game last night was because Kirk Cousins was able to maintain his composure, be poised in the pocket, and make a run there in the fourth quarter. And if you look at those last four plays, it was really good defense by the Seattle Seahawks. And when we talk about his record and some of these other things, who me knowing Kirk the way I do, he is very aware of. He understands what people are saying about him, but he also understands that he was with a Washington Redskins team that wasn't very good to build up some of those statistics. And obviously, he got over the fourth quarter hump and coming back against the Denver Broncos. And I believe if given the opportunities with this team that can play defense and run the football, he can make the plays required of him to win in the playoffs.
I agree. It wasn't as if he played poorly last night.
Not at all.
You know, I mean, that just wasn't the case. He played well. He ran up against a team who just,
he had nine different receivers last night, and they pointed out on Monday Night Football last night how important Monday Night Football is to Kirk Cousins. He really wanted to get that win, knowing that record is just hanging on him, and he came so close. He did everything he possibly could.
I think the big thing for Kirk Cousins and for the Miami Dolphins is to stop thinking about those. I'm not my Minnesota Vikings. Is to stop thinking about those things in those moments.
I was looking for the parallel.
I know. I had nothing for you.
Through it.
And just make sure that he understands it's about playing that game. You can't erase 8 games of Monday Night Football in one night.
Yeah.
It's about winning the game that you're playing at the moment.
There's no question. All right, Coach, the loss puts the Vikings at 8-4. They are in the mix, but they'll have to take care of business. Panic or patience on Minnesota in the playoffs?
I'm patient.
Oh, everybody's patient today.
I don't know. We woke up all patient today.
Yes, meditation, Coach. Meditation.
It's simple. You watch the game. You understand.
Contagious.
to me, the biggest question coming out of last night was, I thought the defense was stronger, okay? But what they got out of Kirk Cousins gave me hope, all right? They're going to get, eventually Thielen's going to get healthy. Their ability to run the football is one of the top offenses in the league in terms of running the football. So to me, the fact that Cousins looks like somebody you can depend on.
Yeah.
Other than that last 4th and 3, that was really frustrating because just to throw that route into, I don't know, you knew you were going to get cover 3. Yeah. I was just disappointed with where they went on that, but I thought he played well enough to win, and that gives me hope.
What's fascinating about this is that the Vikings play the Packers in Week 16 on Monday night. That could decide the NFC North, and, of course, it could mean a win, finally, for Kirk Cousins on Monday Night Football. I think he should take Ryan's advice, though, and worry about winning that ball game.
Absolutely.
And nothing else.
They fit your extension worth around $90 million and more than $45 million guaranteed. All of that makes Ezekiel Elliott the highest paid running back in the National Football League.
Got to pay your young quarterbacks. Carson Wentz, 4 years, guarantees $107 million.
The Rams decided to get in on the spending spree. An NFL record, 110 of which is guaranteed. All right, all right, all right. Cyber Monday has come and gone. Now we question all those big purchases, money spent, some cost, but that's all right. With that in mind, we're going to look at some of these deals, the big spenders. Are we happy or not so happy? They call it buyer's remorse, Ryan.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have it, but let's start with Carson Wentz because they paid the man some money.
Well, listen, I went to CarsonWentz.com in the offseason, and I spent about $109 million guaranteed, and it was a good deal. It was worth it. This guy has all the talent in the world. He's had that type of MVP caliber measurables, and I think some other things go right for the Philadelphia Eagles, and Carson Wentz becomes a dude we talk about as an all-pro and maybe even an all-time great down the stretch.
All right, listen, the reason CarsonWentz.com was open for business is because one Nick Foles moved on. Involved of a transaction of his own. Good deal, bad deal, Coach?
Well, it was a good deal for Nick Foles.
Well, yeah, that part's not up for argument.
It was a bad deal for the Jaguars. To me, they overpaid. All right, I know he won a Super Bowl.
Coach, you want to return it?
I want to return it.
Oh, goodness.
He doesn't have
check
to give up
policy.
The money, but I'm just saying it wasn't a good deal for them. I think they did not invest enough in their offensive line before they went out and got a quarterback. Hardly anybody could function in that behind that offensive line right now.
Well, when you're paying a quarterback that kind of money, you've got to protect him. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Jared Goff signed a big extension, Diana.
Yeah, so he had an MVP caliber type year, signed $134 million, biggest contract in the NFL. I'm going to go with that this is a good deal. Here's the issue with Jared Goff, who we saw before this past game was in this drought, going 3 games without throwing a touchdown, then came out here and looked great against the Cardinals. It was like, there he is. He's back. Look, I'm going to say this every single day on this show when we talk about guys that have gone to the Super Bowl or at least played in one. You're going to deal with a lot of challenges. They say success is like drinking a martini. It relaxes you. And I think that's what happens when you go that far.
I've never heard that about why I drink martinis.
Yeah.
I've also never drank a martini, I guess. So.
Well, we have something to do after the show. It relaxes you. I'll give you I'll break the story to you. But I think sometimes that's what happens when you achieve that high. You tend to maybe get a little lackadaisical in the habits that made you and helped you get to that point. So I still think it's a great deal for the Rams, even though they did that signing very early.
I know I'm going to be in the minority on this one, so I'm curious to hear what you say about Ezekiel Elliott.
Well, listen, I went to feedmeandcabo.org in the offseason, and we made him the highest paid running back in the NFL. And I believe what happened was I was trying to build a great team, and I thought, okay, let me go to feedmeandcabo.org and pay for this running back, and I paid a little too much because what I couldn't do was make sure I paid my quarterback when I went to the next website. And Ezekiel Elliott is a very good player, but he is not enough to be the highest paid player at his position and then also want to continue and keep building this team. So for me, that was a bad deal. You don't spend that much money on a runner
overpaid,
when there's so many
overpaid.
Other people that can do that job.
It just is what it is on that one. I completely agree. The Browns traded for Odell Beckham Jr. It wasn't going well in New York. They said they didn't sign to trade him, but that's what they did. Diana, good deal, bad deal for the Browns.
Yeah, I went to Dave Gettleman's yard sale there, and I realized that I had a good deal there. And it's a good deal, and Coach made a great point before, a good deal, but just not being used properly. I think the Cleveland Browns have struggled all season long finding a way to make this work. We know he's seeing double teams every single Sunday, but at what point are they going to figure out a way to get him open? This past Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers, I didn't even know where he was on the field at some points, especially when they needed him most in that third quarter. So while I still think he's one of the best receivers in the game, I think it's Cleveland that needs to figure out how to use him best.
A lot of things haven't gone exactly as planned in Cleveland. The Rams also made a trade acquiring Jalen Ramsey. Smart move?
I think it was one of those rare situations where it was a win-win.
And they're not many. Coach.
And so I'm saying it was a good deal, okay? I like the fact that the Rams were aggressive. All right, they went out and they got a star player, one of the better players at his position. He's a tremendous asset to add, all right? And in return, the Jaguars got a real nice haul in terms of draft picks. So to me, I like the fact that both teams won.
All right, you know how you go into a store and you think, yeah, I really, you know, that's out, I want that. Got my eye on it. As soon as it goes on sale, man, I'm going to ante up. All right, so deal you're looking out for. You got your eye on. I'm going to start with Diana, though.
Oh, go first.
You can think about it.
I'm going Teddy. I think the situation with Teddy back during the free agency, right? So we knew the Miami Dolphins were in on him. They wanted to make him a starter. They were even going to be willing to give him more money. But the Saints convinced them to stay there, saying that we got a future for you. So I'm curious, what's going to be the future of Teddy Bridgewater? Will he stay in New Orleans, or will he hit the market and become a starter for an organization that needs it?
All right, who's up?
Period point blank, I'm going with Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes. Neither of these guys will be up next year,
but they're not
going to get to their fifth year on those contracts. Going to be $200 million and probably $200 million on the other side, and these guys are going to deserve every single penny.
That's what you call write the check, Coach.
Where's the beef? All I know is Big Chris Jones right here. The Chiefs have to find a way. Don't let this big fella get away from you now. I know you got to pay Patrick Mahomes. There's not a lot of money. All right? You can't afford everybody, but this guy right here, if you don't take care of him, somebody else will.
All right. It's the holiday season. Time to buy. Buy and buyer beware. Thank you. Switching gears back to 2019, the Patriots have work to do on offense if they will come home with ring number 7. Tom Brady struggling like we haven't seen in quite some time. His yards per attempt and first down rate are his lowest since 2002, the last time the Patriots missed the playoffs. His total QBR also at its lowest since that stat began in 2006. As we say hello from the red zone, where we spend a little more time on topics, and it's interesting, I do want to be careful here because we have done this time and time and time again, talking about the Patriots and this incredible dynasty they've put together coming to a close. But I will say this, something, you know, everything ends. That's just the way it works. What would be the signs, Diana, if you wanted to say that a dynasty like this is coming to a close? What would the signs be, and are we seeing that with New England, in your opinion?
I guess we'd have to see Tom Brady really struggle. And while he's not having a great year, I don't think Tom Brady's the issue. You go up and down this Patriots organization in terms of where they're at. You go head coach, they're great. Running game, they're great. Their defense, very good. Quarterback, excellent. Receiver, zero, nothing. They have no options there at this point. And they know that, which is why we saw the whole Antonio Brown situation, and I don't think he's going to be returning to the team. But they're at a point now where that is their weakest link. And until they figure out a way to find someone to catch the ball from Tom Brady, I don't think it's going to get any better. But in terms of this dynasty coming to an end, I'm not even close to being there yet with this New England team.
Look, with the exception of Randy Moss and a few others, this has never been a team built on marquee names at wide receiver, right? That's just not how it's worked. And Tom Brady's been able to compensate for that. Bill Belichick, with the scheme he's put together, been able to figure a way around that. What I think we're seeing now is a situation where Brady is a bit older. Some of the physical skills are different. He cannot compensate in the same way at 42 as you would at 35. It's just not possible.
Listen, I'm 40, and I know I can't go play football. So the fact that Tom Brady is still playing at this level at age 42 is amazing. And you look at some of the things that are going on, not just with this team, but in the league. The league is changing, right? There are not going to be many more Tom Brady's that become league MVPs or that we have in the conversations for the GOAT. He's already lost to Lamar Jackson. He lost to Deshaun Watson. If the Kansas City Chiefs beat him this week, they will have lost to those other two quarterbacks and Patrick Mahomes, who are all part of the new guard of the quarterback position. But more importantly, you will have lost to the three other principals in the AFC. You have lost to the Baltimore Ravens, to the Houston Texans, to the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you were going to ask me, well, who would the Patriots have to beat to get to the Super Bowl? It would be those three teams. And so now the psychological warfare that goes on in your head when you're driving from your hotel to Foxborough, when you're going to the stadium and you're like, man, we got to play Bill Belichick. We got to play Tom Brady. This is different. These little dudes don't think like that anymore. They don't remember Rodney Harrison. They don't remember Teddy Bruschi. This is just a New England Patriots team that doesn't have an outside receiver, that has an old dude that plays quarterback, that if they can't keep people under 14 points, they lose. You have to win this game. You have to play better, or it does signify that if it's not over, this era is coming to an end.
Do you agree, Coach, that that fear factor that was so clearly in place with the Patriots, or at least it should be because most of the time you came away with a loss, do you agree that we're seeing other teams fear the Patriots less than they once did?
Well, they're fearing them offensively less because they're less potent. They lost their fullback. He was injured this year. They lost their tight end, Gronk, retired. All right, they haven't adequately replaced him. Their offensive line is beat up and not as strong as it's been. So, yeah, that's you're asking Tom to, like, carry and become magical and do things, you know, with that group. He can't. So he's not going to be able to do that. So, yeah, no, there is a young group, especially in the AFC. Those three quarterbacks we're talking about are very talented. There's a chance he could, going into the playoffs, he could have lost to all three. We'll see what happens this weekend. The bottom line is don't sleep on the Patriots. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, they've got the heart of a champion, all right? They will not go down easy. So they're going to have to be beat.
It is one time where, to me, the intangible is tangible. You know, we talk about other factors and chaos and outside noise and all that. I always think, I don't know how much it really matters. In the case of the Patriots and really understanding how to win, to me, it matters. They still have that. Mm-hmm. So bet against the Patriots at your own peril. What is it? Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and maybe the most important, don't forget Giving Tuesday. Okay, that's today.
I've actually never heard of that.
Yes, no, it's a thing too. It's like charity.
If you say it, I believe it.
Well, it's Tuesday. Where's your gift?
Anyway, Giving Tuesday. Give to your favorite charity.
Yep.
This is not very charitable, but just bear with us because it is what it is. Buying or keeping or return. We got some head coaches in the first year on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Some are excelling, some are struggling. So let's start with Bruce Arians. Coach, this is you. Coach Arians knows this. He's been around a long time. He can take it.
B.A.
Fire return.
He knows what he's doing.
He knows the real deal.
He could not or has not been able to get his quarterback.
Which is why he was hired.
Jameis Winston continues to turn the ball over at an incredible rate, but I'm still saying that B.A. is a keeper.
Okay.
I love B.A. He might need a new quarterback, but he's done a good job.
Yeah, a turnover machine is what he's got in his hands, I'm afraid. All right, D, who you got? Coach Fangio?
All right, this was an easy one for me. You keep Vic Fangio. You know, here's a guy who's a coordinator his entire life, something like 35 years. His first time being a head coach. He's got a first-year offensive coordinator. He doesn't have a quarterback, or at least we're not really too sure at the quarterback position. So I just think he needs some time to adjust. I mean, this is a guy who's never been on the sideline his entire career. He's called games from up in the booth. So even something as simple as that, making the transition, let's give him some time there.
All right, Brian Flores in Miami.
This is so easy.
Brian Flores
is a keeper, and if you can go back and buy other ones in different sizes, you go and do that as well. Brian Flores takes over a team that we all feel is tanking. The organization is giving away his good players one by one. And you know what he did? He said, you know what? I'm going to continue coaching. I'm not here to tank. I don't care about getting the number one pick. This team is going to compete. I'm going to compete hard. I'm going to work hard each and every day. And we are watching this team, at least this last weekend, beat the Philadelphia Eagles, who are fighting to win the NFC East.
Listen, that front office has got to be, for the love of God, what do we got to do?
Do we got to fire you, too?
What do we got to do? You keep winning, sort of. But more than we thought. Coach, Adam Gase.
All right, Adam Gase, okay. My guy, Adam, but listen,
ahead,
you know, you
friend.
Were hired to be a quarterback whisperer. And he made him see ghosts. Okay, that.
Just tap it, coach.
We're gonna tap it one more time.
Yeah, I'm gonna tap it again.
We're gonna send it over here.
Tap.
All right, that's what happens when you don't take care of your quarterback. That's your number one job.
We got Freddie Kitchens up next.
Listen, Freddie Kitchens, I bought a shirt the other day. It said it is hot in the kitchen. Pittsburgh might have started it, but they finished it on Sunday. When you're Freddie Kitchens and you take over this team that is loaded with talent, that the expectations are so high, and you get a job because of what you did last year as being the offensive coordinator, you have to do better. You have to find a way to incorporate Odell Beckham Jr., which Diana was talking about earlier. You have to find a way to get this team focused where you're not leading the league or tops of the league in penalties. And if you are going to wear a shirt that says Pittsburgh started, if you're going to become a part of the locker room, you better understand that locker room, be able to galvanize that locker room and make sure they come out and back you with a win in a very important
division. I know it's not the end of the world, but I'm old school on that one. Didn't like the t-shirt.
Yeah.
I mean, he said he wore a jacket to cover it, so his instincts were right. I probably shouldn't wear this out in public, and he said that he would wear it again because his daughter gave him.
Oh, come on.
Well, do you do everything that your children tells you?
Be the grown up.
What it's called is trying to figure out a way to take the heat off of him for doing something that he now knows wasn't very intelligent from the beginning.
He owned it on Sunday and said, I should have never worn it. End of story, right?
Agreed. Matt LaFleur.
Oh, Matt LaFleur? I went to Aaron Rodgers' happy.com and I kept him there. I'm sure it's a website thing. Why? Because I think that he and Aaron Rodgers, believe it or not, despite the fact that we came into the season concerned about this relationship, have actually grown one. I think Aaron has had more flair and just overall happiness in his game with Matt LaFleur being there. And in terms of their run game and what they've been able to come up with this offense, the fact that Aaron Jones has been this productive, this all falls on Matt LaFleur. And I definitely think that he's the future.
Aaron Rodgers hasn't had to spell one word for us all season. So no
he only knows how to spell one.
Yeah, no, relax. All right, Coach, you got Zach Taylor?
Is there an exchange option?
Oh,
I would see, I mean, why not?
Keith, wow. I guess we're going to exchange.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
who are you exchanging for?
Coach want to exchange it.
Either way, it's
I got a guy that can get Coach. I know a guy who coaches a little football.
With Zach Taylor, we got rid of Marvin Lewis for Zach Taylor, and I'd rather go back to Marvin Lewis. But I'm going to say Zach, one out of 12, that's just not getting it done in this league.
Yeah.
It's been a tough run. We'll leave it at that.
So that's what you're going to call it?
That's what I'm going to call it right now because
it's
the holiday season.
You've been doing TV all that time and you came up with this.
Well,
because
I'm being generous.
Why are you being so nice today?
Why are you being so nice?
In the spirit.
I know. I feel the spirit. Maybe I'm meditating.
These are first-year head coaches, though. We got to be a little bit more peaceful.
No, we don't. I'm not that nice.
I mean, Adam's done it before, but in these organizations.
So are these.
Bruce is old.
All of them are.
All right, Bryce.
Yeah, there you go. Jump on board.
All right.
Come on.
All right, so I'll finish off with a good one then. Cliff Kingsbury. All right, so their defense needs to get better. We know that. But he was brought in to develop Kyler Murray. He was brought in to develop an offense. And, boy, how different do they look? Remember what they were like last year? That was abysmal. So the fact that he was able to come in here and at least give us a little sign of hope with this offense, it's at least
a little bit better.
And if they get an offensive line.
Once they get an offensive line.
It's a work in progress. I was up here criticizing that hire. So
I guess.
You don't like that one?
I guess they're not abysmal anymore.
Yeah. Okay, they're not great.
I guess my TV was broken. My TV must have been broken this Sunday when I watched them against the Rams.
Like Trubisky.
But that's stumping.
All right. From a new head coach to an old head coach, ESPN Steelers reporter Brooke Pryor tweeting what many expected after last week's win. Duck Hodges will be the quarterback again this week, according to Mike Tomlin, as well as an injury update here. Tomlin says there's not much clarity on the availability on Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner. They are both questionable as we stand right now on Tuesday afternoon. Today, ESPN kicks off V-Week in an effort to raise awareness for cancer research. We will never forget some of the great moments with Stuart Scott, who was a huge part of ESPN's NFL coverage, hosting NFL Primetime, Sunday NFL Countdown, and Monday Night Countdown during his 21-year career. But the moment that resonates most came 5 years ago at the ESPYs. It's hard to believe it's been that long since Stu accepted the Jimmy V Perseverance Award and delivered a message that still lives strong today.
Every day I am reminded that our life's journey is really about the people who touch us. When I first heard that I was going to be honored with this reward, the very first thing that I did was I was speechless, briefly. I've presented this award before. I mean, I've watched in awe as Kay Yao and Eric LeGrand and all these other great people grace this stage. And although intellectually I get it, I'm a public figure, I have a public job, I'm battling cancer, hopefully I'm inspiring. At my gut level, I really didn't think that I belong with those great people. But I listened to what Jim Valvano said 21 years ago. The most poignant 7 words ever uttered in any speech anywhere. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. Those great people didn't. Coach Valvano didn't. So to be honored with this, I now have a responsibility to also not ever give up. I'm not special. I just listened to what the man said. I listened to all that he said, everything that he asked of us. And that's to build the V Foundation. And let me tell you, man, it works. I'm talking tangible benefits. You saw me in that clinical trial. Now, here's the thing about that. Coach Valvano's words 21 years ago, helping me and thousands of people like me right now, direct benefits. That's why all of this, why we're here tonight, that's why it's so important. I also realized something else recently. You heard me kind of allude to it in the piece. I said, I'm not losing. I'm still here. I'm fighting. I'm not losing. But I got to amend that. When you die, that does not mean that you lose to cancer. You beat cancer by how you live, why you live, and in the manner in which you live. So live. Live. Fight like hell. And when you get too tired to fight, then lay down and rest and let somebody else fight for you. That's also very, very important. I can't do this don't give up thing all by myself. I got thousands of people on Twitter and on the streets who encourage me. I got these amazingly wonderful people at ESPN. I got corporate executives, my bosses, this is true, who will text message me. And they'll say, hey, heard you had chemotherapy today. You want me to stop by on the way home from work and pick you up something to eat and bring it to you? Seriously? Who does that? Whose boss does that? My bosses do that. But even with all that, the fight is still much more difficult than I even realized. What you didn't see in the piece is what's gone on probably the last 10 days. I just got out of the hospital this past Friday. 7-day stay. Man, I crashed. I had liver complications. I had kidney failure. I had 4 surgeries in a span of 7 days. I had tubes and wires running in and out of every part of my body. And guys, when I say every part of my body, every part of my body. As of Sunday, I didn't even know if I'd make it here. I couldn't fight. But doctors and nurses could. The people that I love, my friends and family, they could fight. My girlfriend, who slept on a very uncomfortable hospital cot by my side every night, she could fight. The people that I love did last week what they always do. They visited, they talked to me, they listened to me, they sat silent sometimes. They loved me. And that's another one of the components of the V Foundation. This whole fight, this journey thing is not a solo venture. This is something that requires support. I called my big sister Susan a few days ago. Why? I needed to cry. It was that simple. And I know that I can call her. I can call my other sister Cynthia, my brother Stephen, my mom and dad, and I can just cry. And those things are very important. I have one more necessity. Yeah, it's really two. Two very vibrant, intelligent, beautiful young ladies. The best thing I have ever done, the best thing I will ever do, is be a dad to Taylor and Sydney. It's true. I can't ever give up because I can't leave my daughters. Yes, sometimes I embarrass them. Sometimes they think I'm a tyrant. That's a direct quote. There is an adjective that describes tyrant too, but I'm not going to go there. But Taylor and Sydney, I love you guys more than I will ever be able to express. You two are my heartbeat. I am standing on this stage here tonight because of you. My oldest daughter, Taylor, I wanted her to be here, but college sophomore, summer school, second semester, starting this week. Baby girl, I love you, but you go do you. You go do that. My littlest angel is here, my 14-year-old. Sydney, come up here and give Dad a hug because I need one. I want to say thank you, ESPN. Thank you, ESPYs. Thank all of you. Have a great rest of your night and have a great rest of your life.
Tomorrow, to honor our friend and to drive awareness for cancer research, we will celebrate Stuart Scott Day here at ESPN. You can support the Stuart Scott Cancer Research Fund at ESPN.com/VWeek. We'll be back.
In celebration of the NFL's 100th season, we look back at this date in NFL history. December 3rd of 2015, when Aaron Rodgers completed the first of two Hail Marys in 6 weeks, and that gave the Packers a 27-23 win over the Lions. Green Bay trailed in the final seconds when a face mask penalty gave Rodgers another chance. With one last try, on an untimed down, Aaron Rodgers scrambled to the right and threw the ball over 65 yards in the air to the end zone. That's where tight end Richard Rodgers came down with the touchdown to give the Packers an improbable win.
Thank you, Tess. Well, Monday night delivered last night. You had the Seahawks and the Vikings with a lot of playoff implications. Now, the two teams they're respectively battling for in their divisions, the Packers and the 49ers. So we're breaking out the playoff predictor.
All right. Okay.
Yes. Fascinating to see these numbers change. I know, I do like it too. Coach, you're up first with the Pack.
Let's look at the Packers, right? They're playing the Redskins next week, or this week. We're going to give them a win. 90%. All right. It would be a huge upset if they don't win that one. Let's give them that win, all right? Now, the Bears game. This is where it kind of gets interesting, all right? The Packers, basically, as long as they win two games, one more of these last three, they're going to be in. Doesn't matter which one it is. But I'll show you, and I'll just say, if they lose that game, it goes to 50% to win the division, but it's still at 93 to make the playoffs, okay? They're going to win that game. Okay,
those numbers look strong.
Let's say the Vikings, let's say they go ahead and lose that one and then win the division. The last week, it would just depend if they're going to be in a play. So what I'm saying is they win two games, they're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter which two.
Right, it doesn't matter because they're all NFC teams.
Well, what happens if they lose three? Let's do that.
If they lose a third one, they're not going to win the division.
But look, they almost
strong odds to make the playoffs. So
you'll see Green Bay in the playoffs.
The Packers are going to get in.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in a strong situation here. If they want to win the division, they've got to win at least two games.
Strong to quite strong, Coach.
Strong to quite strong.
How about my friends in San Francisco?
Well, listen, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, you feel like you're in the same position that the Green Bay Packers are in, and that if you win enough games, or you have probably won enough games already by this point, that you will be in the playoffs. But for the San Francisco 49ers, it's about whether or not we can win the NFC West and can we host the playoffs throughout the NFC Championship. You look at this game against the Saints, it's in the Superdome, it's in New Orleans. I think the Saints are tough to beat there. They'll understand how important this game is. So I'm going to say that they will lose this game. There we go. We got it up right now. Now you get the Falcons. I believe that they beat the Falcons, and it's not even a question. They get the Rams and it's at home, and everybody remembers what Jared Goff looked like. This Los Angeles Rams team looked like when they played the San Francisco 49ers. It was a blowout and it wasn't even close at any point in the game. When it was 0-0, we even knew the San Francisco 49ers were going to win.
First quarter.
Okay, and so now here we go with the Seahawks. This is going to be the game that is going to decide the NFC West. The Seahawks, they're going to have to play the Rams. They have to play the Carolina Panthers. They have the Cardinals as well. And so when you get to this game, they're going to need a win. It's at CenturyLink. I believe the San Francisco 49ers lose this game. And with that, pop up. Wait, come on. Pop up. Bam.
I was going to say that.
No.
Wow, that's
not there.
It's down.
No, we
somehow missed
it. That.
They're losing the division. First round bye.
Oh, yeah.
The numbers are the numbers, Ryan Clark.
So, essentially.
The numbers are the numbers.
Wait, let's just say they go to New Orleans and they stun the Saints.
I don't think it would be a stun, but okay, they win.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, it's obviously gone up, but.
They got to win out to get
everything is dependent on the Seahawks.
Yeah, well, the problem is you lost at home to the Seattle Seahawks. Now the Seattle Seahawks have two losses, and even if they go into that game with the third loss, they have an opportunity to win, and in winning that game, they get the division.
That's not good. But let's just say that.
No, that's not good.
Mm-hmm. You're kind of playing with his board. What's up?
Yeah. Oh.
You got it. Take it over.
I'm just curious on what the situation has
Listen.
To be. Look, just make it easy, boys.
Let me keep it simple. Just win.
Win out?
Just win.
No, absolutely. But I think
that is interesting.
To me, though, this is the intrigue of the NFC. The NFC
no
is totally different than the AFC.
It is night and day in a way that we haven't seen in quite
absolutely.
Some time. I would agree with you.
It's Hack Tuesday, everyone.
I can't even get off my chair. I'm so excited.
I guess we're putting helmets on.
Really,
you know what?
And it never goes on.
Oh, firing up.
All right, look,
I ain't wore this in a long time.
I'm all in on those Denver Broncos.
Wow.
Come on, no. Doug Marone. Make me look good.
Go. Adam Schefter has the mini helmets that go on his mini head.
All in on the Vikings. They're going to run it. Oh. Yes, he left it on. I feel mobile with Deshaun.
All right, cue the tunes. It's Hat Tuesday. You know, it'll be the real Mardi Gras before we turn around. All right, Coach. First, we got to have Ryan do his little dance. So
I'm listening. Go ahead.
All right, yeah, you thought you'd do that. Who are you all in on for week 14?
I'm all in. Listen, they have to travel all night, all through the night. But they're going to get it done. Zim, they're going to pick up that defense and get them going again.
Stop the run
and beat Detroit. Get it done against the Lions. Get back on track.
Right.
I'm up.
Yeah.
The Cincinnati Bengals, not because I think that they're going to do anything going forward, but I do like the fact that Zach Taylor understood that he needed to win the game. You bench Andy Dalton, you go to a backup quarterback, he's not getting it done. You stop worrying about the future and you worry about Sunday, get a big win against the Jets. Nobody wants to go defeated. It's not undefeated, but nobody wants to go defeated.
Defeated, that is true.
All right.
Kind of think about that one a little there. Here, I am going to be all in on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I am
way to go out on a limb, Diana.
Hey, listen, I've been there.
I just think what Mike Tomlin has done this season, he's got to be at least considered to be coach of the year. His players at halftime said that he saved the game by making the adjustments he made at halftime against this Cleveland Browns team. So they go up against the Arizona Cardinals. I think they're going to beat them.
Listen, they play the Jets. There you go. That's it.
That's what you came up with?
They play the Jets. Sorry, Jets. Have a great day, everybody.